Thanks, Tommy. Thanks very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, Jeremy. Good afternoon on this Monday afternoon. How are you? Happy if you're from Limerick. Not so happy if you're from Kilkenny. And if you're in neutral, still in awe of the mesmeric performance of both teams yesterday in the All-Ireland Hurling Final. It was just amazing. Just like 30 points. It looked at one stage that there was some sort of big, huge magnet over the Kilkenny bar. And every time that any Limerick man from wherever he was hit the Schlitter, it just went. It just went over the bar. 30 points. Amazing. And four in a row. And of course, they've won five All-Irelands now in the last 6 years. So one of the greatest hurling sides of all time. Perry Square down in Limerick is the location, the venue for the homecoming this evening, although it's not a homecoming as such because they went home last night. But that's where the celebrations are happening. And we're going to be speaking to a super fan, Pat Bog Carroll, about the match and about him looking forward to the big event tonight in a moment. John Kiley, of course, the manager, the coach, amazing man. And I was listening to him and reading some of his interviews, and he's talking about getting the team to live in the now. And of course, we read this in all the self-help books, you know, in the now. And we also read about the zone, in the zone. And I heard him on Morning Ireland talk about the flow. And all of these things, they're all Buddhist sort of, that go back thousands of years. And now people who are involved in Gaelic football and other things are taking them on board, and they're working for them. They're working for them. Now, there's obviously fitness and their skills and everything, but to get the brain in tune with just the now. So you're not thinking about the four in a row. You're not thinking about what happened last night. You're not thinking about next week. You're just thinking about the now. The Schlitter, the come on, the grabbing the ball, the Schlitter out of the air, all of those things. And you're living in the now and you're getting in the zone and you're in the flow. Mind you, The thing that I'll be talking about for years is not something that one of the Limerick players did. It's one of the Kilkenny players, Owen Cody. I don't know if you saw this in the first half. He got the Schlitter, right? And then he did, I saw a number of people doing it yesterday. I never noticed it before. But he had it in his hand and then he let it fall, bounced the Schlitter off the ground and it came back up to him. And then he did a dummy hand pass, which I'd never seen before either. And he beat three or four guys, and I think he put the ball over the bar, the Schlitter over the bar. Amazing, Owen Cody there. Anyway, we'll be talking to Pat Bog Carroll about that great match yesterday. Another thing that happened over the weekend, Richard Horgan. We spoke to Richard. He talked to us the 4th of July. He was planning to climb the highest peak in every county on the island in 1 week in memory of his sister-in-law. He's a Cork-based consultant, obstetrician and gynaecologist. And he set himself the challenge to complete a fundraising sort of challenge, if you like. All the funds went to the Cork University Maternity Hospital, and he completed his challenge over the weekend on Galtymore, down on the Limerick-Tipperary border, 918 metres, and he was joined by friends and family. So well done, Richard. And we'll get to the final total on how much he raised when we have it to hand. So Elon Musk continues to, some people would say, ruin Twitter. So he's rebranding it now, and the little Tweety bird, the little Twitter bird is gone. The little blue bird is gone, and it's been replaced by an X. And indeed, I see now that he's calling the whole thing X, as in X, very successful social media platform. So it's not Twitter anymore, it's X. But I think it'll always be Twitter. Like, who calls Facebook Meta? Who calls the Point Theatre the Three Arena? You know, and the list goes on. The list goes on. Who calls, you know, Super Value Sausages? Who calls Super Gwen Sausages Super Value Sausages? And the list goes on. Anyway, so his decision to replace Twitter's iconic board is both shocking and inevitable, people are saying. The blue bird is one of the company's most recognisable assets. It has represented Twitter for more than a decade, right from the start. Musk has been open about his ambition to transform Twitter into an everything app called X. It's a Western version of China's WeChat, a sort of a super app. So as well as the messaging sort of element of it, WeChat lets you pay for things as well as play games and do video calls. So it's an expansion of what Twitter would have had to offer. Given the erratic behaviour of Twitter, sorry, X, how many people will link their bank accounts to it? Very few, I'd imagine. But you have to remember that Musk has experience as a PayPal co-founder, so he has the experience. So we'll see what happens with X. But I like that one. We came up with that one, the X as in X, very successful social media. No, okay. Richard has raised. It'd be great if you could rare money, wouldn't it? We'd all be doing it. Anyway, he has raised €33,164 so far. iDonate.ie, Dr. Richard Horgan. And it's open until August 6th. Lizzo. Now, you might remember, Lizzo, but she played with Sir James Galway at the Met Gala earlier in the year, and she cited James Galway as being a huge influence on her when she saw him playing his flute at the age of 11. It changed the trajectory of her life, she says. Anyway, Lizzo is currently touring Australia. She's in Sydney. And somebody threw a recorder at her. Well, up to her would be probably a better way of saying it. The recorder, yeah, we all had them in primary school. I don't know why I didn't learn it, but I know my sisters did. Tin whistle recorder. You started a tin whistle, didn't you? And then you were sort of promoted onto a recorder. Anyway, it's very seldom you can make anything nice out of a recorder. My sister used to play three blind mice in the bedroom next to me. Shh! You should open that recorder, please! So Lizzo took it up and she played. That's not bad. My heart will go on. Classically trained flautist is Lizzo. Lizzo. Aye. There's a new II in the zoo. Yes, it's an animal, a little mammal. We didn't know what it was. We had to Google it. So we got onto the National Geographic site and it tells us that II, A-Y-E-A-Y-E, can be found only on the island of Madagascar. Rare animals, they don't look like primates at first glance, but they are. So they're related, chimpanzees, apes, and indeed us, humans. They're dark brown or black, and they're distinguished by a bushy tail that's larger than their body. And I don't know if this contributes to their name or not, but they have big googly eyes. Big eyes. Aye. See what I'm saying? Yeah. Slender fingers, large sensitive ears. So the body is about 14 to 17 inches and the tail between 22 and 24 inches. Aye. And they have them now in the zoo. And I know a lot of people will be going to the zoo over the summer holidays. So search out the II. They're cute little things. They're cute little things. You can imagine them as a soft toy, the little II. Today is International Self-Care Day. And we have some top tips. You have to remind ourselves. And again, the self-help books are telling us that. We have to take care of ourselves first. And the importance of sleep is reiterated in all the books and in this list too. Having a regular sleep routine is very important. Keeping a reflective journal, not something I ever did, but it is suggested in all the books. Practicing gratitude, an attitude of gratitude. What did they say? You list three things or five things every evening that you're thankful for. Getting a massage. Tried it a couple of times, didn't work out for me. Reading a good book, yes. Learning to say no, that's important too. Asking for help when necessary, that's good too. And listening to relaxing music. Well, we can't do any of the other stuff for you right now because we're on the radio and you're at a distance from us, but we can play some relaxing music for you. So that's what we'll do to celebrate International Self-Care Day. Good afternoon. 51551 ray@rte.ie. Enjoy this from Colm McInumra. Here you go. Our little contribution to International Self-Care Day. Colm McInumra, late afternoon. Beautiful. Just what I needed, says that person. Owen Cody is Henry Shefflin's nephew. We established that a couple of weeks ago. So that's where he got his skill. Well done, Limerick, though. No complaints from here in Kilkenny. Paul, that's very gracious of you. And as a nocturnal lemur, the eye-eye is considered a bad omen in rural Madagascar and is persecuted as a harbinger of bad luck. That's why they're so endangered. Ah, poor little thing. And it's the eye-eye is going to be in the nocturnal house at Dublin Zoo, and it's opening later in the week. So check Dublin Zoo website before you venture up to see the eye-eye. Later in the week, they're going to open up the nocturnal house. Now, just to let you know what we watched over the weekend, there might be something in here for you. Jilly is watching The Dectorists on Netflix. Two friends, Andy and Lance, are amateur archaeologists who share this passion, their passion for metal detecting and wanting to find treasure and gold. It's been on elsewhere, but now it's available on Netflix. And you'll recognise Toby Jones and your man Crook from The Office. That's what Jilly's watching. Grace watched The Rain Ruin a Family Day Out, which is a great new movie on Netflix. No, it's not. It's just what happened over the weekend. She watched The Rain Ruin a Family Day Out. So they stayed indoors and played board games and quizzes instead. Telly was banned, so no recommendations from Grace this week. Neve! Ah, Neve dressed all in pink and went to see Barbie the movie on Saturday. Loved it. Thought it was hilarious, empowering and a treat for the eyes, but was not expecting to come out of the cinema feeling so emotional, leaving tearful voice notes of appreciation for her mates. Also watched the stunning documentary The Deepest Breath by Irish director Laura McGann on Netflix, which tells the incredible story of free divers Alicia Zecchini and Stephen Keenan, who pursue their passions in one of the world's most treacherous sports. And they watched that at home. I didn't get to see it, and they were singing its praises. The Deepest Breath. I'm going to watch it tonight or tomorrow night. We also watched The Flash. Ezra Miller played The Flash. And Saoirse Monica Jackson from Derry Girls was in it as well. That was good, very funny. Loads of cameos there. Michael Keaton, George Clooney, Jeremy Irons in there as well. We also watched The Commuter, which is now available on Netflix with Liam Neeson. It's one of those ones. Liam Neeson is so good at playing most of the action set on a train. Very watchable, and you could probably predict the ending at the start, but it's still good, The Commuter on Netflix. So there you go. Hopefully you'll get something from that. And while we're on the movies, Oppenheimer, of course, was out on Friday as well, and loads of talk about Barbie versus Oppenheimer. Well, they were watching, and they were watching very carefully because they spotted a mistake in Oppenheimer. During a scene set in 1945, J. Robert Oppenheimer, played by our very own Cillian Murphy, goes to deliver a speech to a crowd waving American flags. The flags featured, however, are the current version of the flag, with 50 stars representing 50 states. And that flag wasn't introduced until 1959, over a decade later than the scene in the movie. In 1945, when the scene in the movie was set, the US flag had only 48 stars to represent 48 states, excluding Alaska and Hawaii. Well spotted, eagle-eyed film goers. Now, we're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock and take part in our Who Done It quiz. You know the deal by now, three questions each, and there will be clues or no clues, whatever you're having yourself, and there's a prize. And every day this week, we're giving one lucky listener the chance to win a two-night break away to the capital, checking into the Hendrick Smithfield, Ireland's first street art hotel. The Hendrick is home to a vibrant ground floor bar, an outdoor courtyard space where you can enjoy breakfast each morning. There are over 270 works of Irish and international street art for guests to explore throughout the hotel. Situated in Dublin 7, just off Smithfield Square, a stay at the Hendrick means being close to the very best of what Dublin has to offer. From the capital's many cultural attractions to shopping hotspots and brilliant entertainment venues all close by. As part of today's prize, we also have two visitor experience tickets to the new look Jemison Distillery, Bow Street, just a short stroll from the Hendrick. HendrickDublin.ie, HendrickDublin.ie. And today's qualifying question. Who won the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship final yesterday? Was it Limerick or Kilkenny? So who won yesterday, Limerick or Kilkenny? 0818 715 95, 0818 715 9. Dubai.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Late afternoon, Pauline. She wants the name of the piece of music, and John J. Wall says, I just picked myself off the floor. I listened to your relaxing music and slowly melted to the floor. Everyone on the train are just staring at me. Well, it's not my music, it's Colin McNumbra. Late afternoon, a lovely piece. Yesterday, Limerick sort of wrote themselves into the annals of hurling history by winning four in a row. They're celebrating tonight with all their fans in Perry Square in Limerick. And one man who's definitely going to be there is our next guest, Pat Bog Carroll. How are you doing, Pat?
Good afternoon, Rip.
How excited are you?
I'm over excited.
Now, you were there.
I don't drink, but I'm drunk on the fumes.
Listen, I know you were there in Croke Park, so you didn't get to hear our Marty do his sum up at the end, so I'm going to play it for you. Enjoy this.
Four in a row. 1941, 42, 43, 44. Kilkenny, 2006, 2007, 2008, 2009. Limerick joined the elite of hurling by also achieving four in a row. They are the All-Ireland champions. They've done it, the Shannonsiders. John Kiley, Paul Kinnert, Keane Lynch. They've all contributed to a magnificent time. Alan Cunningham from Wolf Tones in Shannon. Heartbreak for Kilkenny. Green and white, the dominant colours. The joy etched on their faces. From 1973 to 2018, Limerick won All Ireland. And then this group of young hurlers from an under 21 team came along with a great manager, John Kiley. And look at what they've done. They have written their own story, their own chapter. Green smoke billows out of Croke Park. Wherever you are in the world, it is Limerick, four in a row All Ireland champions. Limerick, 30 points. Kilkenny, 2 goals and 15.
Oh, Limerick, you're a lady.
Hey, that's a nice ring to set four in a row.
It's mad, 1973 to 2018. Nothing.
Yeah, Ray, I mean, like, I've been going to matches since kind of about 82, 83.
Yeah.
And, like, you never looked like you were going to be, you know, to win an All-Ireland, you know, even to be in an All-Ireland, to mind win one, like, yeah. You know, and we had some heartbreaking days as well in 94, 96, 07, you know, but, God, this is stuff of dreams. Like,
it is stuff of dreams, and one of the greatest teams of all time, which is amazing. So just on your name, because you were quoted in the Times, the Irish Times on Friday, and we quoted you. But you're named Pat the Bog Carroll, and I see today you're Pat Bog Carroll. So which is the correct name?
Well, my actual name is Padraig.
Right.
Everybody knows me as Pat. We'll say where I live in Crewe.
Yeah.
But my nickname is Bog.
Just Bog, okay, right. And how'd you
B-O-G.
Get... B-O-G. Yeah, how'd you get that?
I was born in Grana, and I moved to Croome in 83. Now, Grana would be considered country.
Uh-huh.
And Croome would be considered a town.
Yes.
So when I arrived into sixth class, plus my voice had broken a bit early as well, like so... So they thought I sounded like somebody from the bog.
Yeah, so you're a bog man. That's a
bog man. Yeah.
I understand completely because I was a townie, and then we had the lads coming in from Nurney, and they were, you know, we never said it to our faces because we were too cowardly, but they would have been bog men. Yeah. So you've been going since the early 80s, and your hat, you used to wear a what type of hat?
I used to have a Davy Crockett green and white hat before.
Right. And you've moved on to what?
A sombrero now.
Right.
A friend of mine, Johnny Fitz, was out on holidays one day and he happened to come across a green one and he said, you know, that I would probably get some bit of use out of this.
Yeah.
So he brought it home. And since probably the mid-90s, I'd say, I've been wearing that sombrero at all the Limerick matches.
And did I read you? Did I read you had a new one then on Friday? Did you get a new one?
Yeah, I bought a modern version, right. Something, because this one is getting a little bit shook. But the one that I bought is way bigger than this one. Like, so I'd say I'd probably have need tickets for the hat as well as myself.
And the other thing is,
and superstition as
exactly,
well. Sorry, Ray.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Because obviously it was your sombrero that won all those All-Irelands. It wasn't the lads. It was your sombrero.
No. They contributed to it. I mean, if I wasn't there with that,
yeah, of course they wouldn't have won. It's mad the way we think those things, isn't it?
Well, that's it. And you kind of think. Because I had the two friends of mine, Noel Hayes and Sean McKenna, that got to the matches with me.
Yeah.
And for some of the earlier matches, they used to wear these cowboy hats with them.
Yeah.
And they didn't wear them. and we weren't getting the results that we needed. So I told them, from here on in, you have to be wearing your cover hats.
Yeah. Of course, they started winning then.
So I don't know now. If they're striking up some extra medals, they can give us three of them.
Yeah, yeah. So Perry Square tonight, that's going to be brilliant, isn't it? Because the win yesterday, Pat, was like just definitive. It was like the second half was textbook hurling. It was like I was dreaming watching it.
Yeah, it was the Limerick of the last number of years, really, where they everything just clicked, and as I said, they put in an almost perfect performance in the second half. I suppose we were lucky that in the first half, while we didn't necessarily play as well as we are capable of playing, we only actually went in 3 points down, which was crucial as well, I suppose. But they're a gifted bunch, and it's a pleasure to be watching them. Like,
yeah, they're savage. I mentioned your mate there on Friday as well. I saw a video of you. Was it Handsome Pa? Is he your partner in crime?
Oh, Pa Buckley. Yeah. Unfortunately, Pa at the moment is in hospital.
Oh, is
so
he?
I just want to wish him
my best. All right. Well, get well soon, Pa. Yeah, that's so he didn't get to go.
Yeah, he's another man that dresses up. He paints his face, and he has the flags, and he's another character as well that goes to these matches. Like,
yeah. So a Kerry man said to you that this Limerick team could do the five in a row. You said, well, we have to do the four in a row first. You've done the four in a row. So now
the drive is on.
The drive is on for five. Yeah. Well, listen, enjoy the celebrations tonight, Pat, and we'll talk to you this time next year.
Perfect. Can I just, before I go, there's a young lad, Paddy McAvoy from Maru. He is going for surgery today in Crumlin. And I just want to wish him my best. His mother is actually a tip woman, Sandra. His dad is a Clare man, Gary. But I just want to wish him the best of luck from everybody.
Paddy McAvoy, yeah. And just before I let you go, the unfurling of the flag, because you had a new flag, did you, yesterday?
We unfurled it, and it got a lot of pictures. There was a lot of people wanting to pose with it. So
what did it say?
Tonight again. In God we trust, but in brackets, behind God is John Kiley. Plus, there's a picture of John underneath it.
Uh-huh.
And in Limerick, we pray to John.
There you go. Right. Pat Bogcarroll, enjoyed this evening. Thanks for taking the call, Pat. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, we're looking for contestants for our quiz. Just a reminder, the qualifying question. Who won the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship final yesterday? Limerick or Kilkenny? 0818715925. It's a great prize. The Hendrick Smithfield. Two-night stay for two people. HendrickDublin.ie. So 0818715925. Now, we're joined in studio by novelist, author, Eithne Shortall. Eithne, this is your fifth book.
Correct, yes.
Aha. The Lodgers, which I enjoyed over the weekend.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I want to hang out with Tessa.
Yes, me too. I know. Yes. The older characters that I write, the characters that are older than me, are usually just ones I aspire to have in my life telling me to cop on and what to do. And, you know, those people, like, I just think of my grandmother and many older people in my life like this, where they love you, but they don't go on about the fact that they love you. You know what I mean? They show it rather than tell it. And I'm kind of drawn to those people, and they'll tell you to cop on when you need to be told to cop on. And they are kind without telling you all the time that they're being kind.
And
there's
no BS about them.
No, exactly. It's just really pragmatic, straight. And I just find that so comforting.
And she's so wise and yet fun. She's not too earnest.
No. And the other thing is she's older than me and than the other character in it, but she's not that old, she's only 69, but still I find that in a lot of books, when you have that older character, they can be kind of patronised or something, you know. But like, obviously she's great with technology, she's a very active life, she's broken her hip at the beginning of the book, and so she kind of takes that as a personal insult almost, because she's so active and now suddenly she's got this restriction on her. But I just love writing those kind of people.
So The Lodgers, as its name suggests, there's the tagline: one house, three strangers, a second chance at happiness. So it's Tessa's house.
Yes.
And we'll get back to your grandmother's house, because it's based on your grandmother's house.
Yeah.
And then after the fall, her son Senan is trying to encourage her to get a carer. And she decides, well, instead of that, she'll take in not one lodger, but two lodgers.
Yeah, well, as she says, she says she's only 69. Like, I'm probably still young enough to get a job as a carer. Never mind. You know what I mean? She's like, I don't need that. But she does need some help around the house. It's a really big house. It's a rickety house. Doesn't have central heating. It needs fuel brought in. It needs cleaning. So, yeah, she has to take in lodgers. She's not happy about it. She's spent her whole life as a social worker and she's still very involved in her local community centre. She's an activist. So she's much more comfortable helping people than being helped. So she sees it as, OK, I'll take them in, but it'll be me giving them free accommodation, which is a great help, especially in contemporary Dublin. And so that's kind of how she comes to terms with it. And then they come. Con has just come home from abroad. His brother has died and he feels a sense of responsibility about it. So he's come home and he is insistent that this he must get the room in this house, even though he's not from the area. And we don't know why. It's revealed, of course, but we don't know why he wants to be in this house so much, but he does. And then Chloe is the other lodger. She has left home that morning, packed up all her possessions, without telling her mother she was going, just gone. Again, we don't know why, but it is revealed.
Yes.
And she turns up at the house and she's actually there as a courier to deliver a package and doesn't realise there is a room going. But once she realises, she thinks, like, this is fate. And the two of them are, Chloe and Connor, competing for the room, so they don't get off to a great start.
So their stories reveal themselves to us. And then the story of the hall
Yes, they're all the kind of community centre, local community centre is in danger. It's basically they're planning, the developers that own it are planning to knock it to build a hotel. Tessa is very involved in the community centre and, like I said, an activist, and so she's not going to take that sitting down. So they all get involved.
So the house in the book is in Howth, but your granny's house was out in the country.
Yes, it's
But everything else about the house is did you holiday there?
Yeah, holiday sounds like it was on foreign soils. I mean, it was a working farm, so I didn't like we holidayed.
It wasn't your house, and you went there and you stayed overnight for a number of nights.
Yes, we did.
So that's a holiday.
And it was a holiday because you were allowed to have sweets way more than you were allowed at home. And my granny's cooking remains my favourite cooking to this day. So it was, but I mean, you know, wasn't in the Algarve.
Where was it?
Leash. Rurally. And it still is. She's still there. I love those old houses, like the big house, as they would be known. And, you know, everything about your life, whatever it is, if you're born and you grow up with it, you don't think it's remarkable. And so my granny's house is a very big house. I think it would be called like a minor country mansion. And it's hundreds of years old. And I never questioned it because I just always went there and it has this really long avenue leading up to it. It was only like when I was a teenager and friends saw photos of it and they were like, what?
fancy.
They're like, oh, landed gentry, is it? But you don't realise until they went out to you. And then the reality of people living in those big houses is actually just the same as my reality or your, you know, like, and it's a normal person's life in a grand house. And actually, like, there is, like, my grandmother's house that the house is based on is my favourite house building in the world. I love it, like, to a level that isn't rational. But those houses are as much a burden as they are a blessing, you know? Like, my granny actually doesn't have central heating.
But I suppose in her world, that hardens you up.
Yeah, well, she told me, literally said to me when I was a teenager that central heating, quote, makes you soft. And maybe she's right because she is one of the strongest, toughest people I know. So maybe she was onto something. Yeah. But they're impossible to keep. Like, you can't, you know, if there's loads of rooms, you're going to close them off. Like, we don't live now, we don't have servants now, we don't live the way those houses were once lived in. But I do think they're important to keep because they are part of our history. A lot of them, like a lot of those houses were burnt down, you know, the War of Independence. So,
do you know the way, it was sort of nice, wasn't it, to write about that house then, if you love it so much.
Yeah.
And you love Tessa, the character. And I suppose that's the essence of a good book, isn't it? That the reader wants to spend time in the company of the characters.
Yeah, but that's exactly writing the book. Like when I was writing that book, I was like, no, I want to spend time with people I like. People, you know, that are good people that I want to be around because I will be around them for a year. And then I guess you hope that if that's true, if you do that, that the reader will enjoy spending the time with them as well.
Getting to know them.
Yeah.
And even the periphery characters like Reggie and Malachi, you know, they're fun to be around as well.
Yeah, I love writing that kind of community cast of characters. And they're all people that are working to save the hall.
Yeah.
And that's also where you get to bring in a lot of humour, because there are some topics in the book that are quite serious. And I'm always trying to balance that, because ultimately I do want it to be fun, you know, and sort of for there to be real heart at the centre of it. I've written 5 novels now, and my publisher will get annoyed sometimes because they will change genre slightly. Sometimes right. they lean more towards romance, sometimes they're more of a suburban mystery. This is probably both of those things. But I was thinking about this myself. I understand why that's annoying, because they're trying to pitch it and then I keep changing slightly. But I think what's at the heart of all of them, and definitely this one, is community, this sense of building a community.
Yeah, and I suppose as, like, I escaped into your book over the weekend.
Yeah, you know, great. So, that's what I want to hear. Yeah, thank you.
But isn't that, you know, but it is, it's escapism, because we all have hassle in our own lives.
Yeah.
And it's nice to go in and be, you know, be in the company of these people.
Yeah, and what I, like, you know, I always think of it that it still has to be within the bounds of realism. So, like, the characters have problems, and it's not like all those problems just get solved. It's not like, you know, deceased loved ones are suddenly alive or wasted years are earned back, or, you know, family tensions have just disappeared. No, actually, their central problems don't disappear. It's about finding the strength and, like, love and security from other people that allows you to accept those issues or realise they're actually only a small part of your life. And yeah. The resilience, I guess, to overcome them, you know.
So you're a full-time writer now. And
yes.
I know you're writing a column for the Business Post, but it's just maternity.
Yes, I'm filling in for a year doing that. So I'll be finished that in September. But
but you took the leap of faith.
Yes, yeah. I was working full-time in the Sunday Times until last August, like almost a year ago now that I left, yeah.
And how does that feel?
Good, yes. When I left, I kept like preparing myself for that the day would come where I would wake up and suddenly go, oh no, like have that dread of what have you done? But I haven't actually had that yet. And I think it was, so I became a parent around the same time of COVID. Both my children, like my son was born 6 months later, COVID began, and then my daughter was born during the kind of COVID.
So he's around 4.
He's nearly 4 and she's just gone 2.
Right.
And so I find it hard to separate what was, you know, a lot of people had these kind of epiphanies or during lockdowns about values and what matters to them, and people change jobs. You know, we read a lot of those articles. I love those stories. But I find it hard to know for me what was becoming a parent and what was COVID, because they're intertwined.
Happened at the same time, yeah.
Yeah, but I definitely did think about what I wanted, what I valued, what I wanted from life, what I wanted to spend my time doing, what my regrets were going to be, you know, all those kind of things. Mm. And people used to say, oh, how do you do it when I worked full time and I wrote books like at a, you know, one a year, which is kind of being a full-time author. And, you know, it was tough, but it was nothing like once you have kids, like, forget about it, you know, like, because I used to say, oh, I get up, you know, for 2 hours before I go to work and I write then. No, wrong. You're actually going to get up 5 hours before you go to work, but you're not going to write a word.
Yeah, yeah.
So I went back from maternity leave with my daughter and I had written about a quarter of The Lodgers. And then I did not write another word after I went back from maternity leave, because I had 2 kids now and I, you know, was busy and my son was sick a bit and I just didn't have any time. And then voluntary redundancy came up. I'd never been eligible. I'd always told myself if it came up, I would just have to take it. So I did. And if I hadn't taken it, I wouldn't have finished my book, because the day job will always come first. It's always more immediate.
There's deadlines, yeah.
Yeah, the deadlines. Yeah. And I, like, even though I had a contract to write The Lodgers, it would have just sailed by, and I would have, without making a choice, I would have chosen journalism, you know.
And now that you're free from that, of course you could have written for the Sunday Times anywhere in the country or anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
But I know that you love Mayo.
I do love Mayo, yeah.
And would you live there? Because I think when you have a family, if you're going to make a move, just for the kids' sake, it's important that you do before they...
Ideally before they start school, is
yes,
that what you're saying?
Yes,
yeah, no, I would agree. But and I'm always at my partner to, you know, like nudging him bit by bit towards
Mayo.
Towards Mayo. Always, like, you know, he's like, specifically in one direction. But I even, like, you know, I'm a lot more convinced than he is. He really likes where we live, and so do I, of course. But, you know, he'd be more reluctant to move. But I was like, I'd just like to rent for a year and see, you know, before you made this whole change. But anyway, I think probably not going to happen. But okay. We spend a lot of time there, like on holidays. And I also, before I had kids, I did a lot of writing there. That's obviously, again, harder.
Whereabouts in Mayo?
Lewisburg.
Oh, yeah, that's
true. You know it? Yeah.
That's a bit of paradise there.
I love it. We're just back. We were there for a week, like on our holidays, and we just came back yesterday, or the day before yesterday. Yeah, it was great. Yeah. And like Westport is so close. Yeah. I love Westport. And
We were talking about Elon Musk and Twitter. It's now X.
X. Just so you know. Saw that this morning.
You'd be Xing as opposed to tweeting.
R.I.P. Twitter, like in many senses.
Did you read Etna Shorthall's X's? doesn't even sound right, does it?
I have X's. They're a different thing. Do you know what I mean? I'd rather not read about them. Thanks very much. No, thanks.
But did you ever think of, what was that? Was it a High Fidelity or one of those? Isn't Nick Hornby books, didn't he?
Where they go through the X's.
Yeah,
he
goes and visits all his X's.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you ever think of doing anything like that?
Oh, Jesus Christ. No. I would say I'm on pretty good terms. Were I to run into, let me see now, I have to go through them all. I wasn't expecting this question. If I were to run into, yes, I would say all of them, I would have a stop and chat.
Oh, good.
So, I mean, isn't that?
Good, that's good. There's an X in the book as well. Yeah. Chloe's X features
in
the book.
Yes, who is a journalist obsessed with Twitter followers.
On Twitter, what do you think? What do you think of Elon Musk? And what he's doing to Twitter?
Well, I think I'm on Twitter. I think I fell out of love with it a while ago. I mean, even more so now, because the way the algorithms work and like what gets seen and what doesn't get seen. But like, it did become very angry. I have more followers there than Instagram, but I way prefer Instagram and I spend much more time there. I mean, I personally find the news hard to take the older I get, and Twitter is kind of like the worst of that. You know, it's like the most exaggerated of the bad things. I notice that I often get suggested to me are like stories about the worst, this is what comes up on Twitter for me, the worst things that could happen to people, like the most heart-wrenching stuff, the stuff that I find difficult to read about in a legitimate news site. And it feels very cynical that these are the stories that are always being suggested to me. So no, I'm on Twitter, but I cannot say I enjoy it.
Okay. And you were sort of in the thick of it yesterday because you live over there, don't you, Drumcondra way?
Yes, yeah.
How does an All-Ireland final impinge on you?
Well, I also grew up in Drumcondra, so I have a lot of opinions and prejudices about certain counties, and I always say it's all based on living near Crow Park and how they behave in terms of litter, parking, you know, things
peeing
like that.
Peeing in your front garden? No, sorry.
peeing at the, not in my, where I grew up, but it's peeing at the side of our house we had last year. So And I just look at their jersey and I'm like, well, that's a stroke against certain county, you know. But we actually, yes, like I try not to be there because it's actually lovely in one way because generally the atmosphere is great. But like traffic wise, it's just bedlam, you know. And so we came back from our holidays and we stayed a night with my de facto in-laws. I'm not married, but you know, the nearest thing. Our in-laws in Lucan. But we had family call in that were all in Limerick jerseys and we're going off to watch the match. So we're delighted for them.
One House, Three Strangers, A Second Chance at Happiness. The Lodgers is the new and fifth novel by Etna Shorthall. It's in bookshops now. Highly recommend it from here. A great holiday read.
Thank you. Yes, I hope so.
Yeah, isn't it?
Escapist.
It'll keep you going for at least a week, if not two.
Good.
Yeah, there you go. Right. Thanks, Etna. Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, the Sixth Commandment on BBC has been getting rave reviews. Subject matter not so good. It tells the horrific story of murder victims Peter Farquhar and Anne Moore Martin at the hands of convicted murderer Ben Field. Ben Field is played by our next guest, Aina Hardwick. How you doing, Aina?
I'm not too bad, Ray. How are you getting on?
Good to talk to you. We've talked a lot about you on the show. Thank you. Yeah, because we watched Lakelands and we spoke to Robert and Patrick, who the writers and directors, and then we spoke to Danielle Galligan, who's your co-star. And I thought just the two of you did brilliantly in it. It was a really, really good movie, Lakelands. Highly recommend it from here.
Thanks a million.
And you were in Normal People as well. You were in Smother, and now you're in The Sixth Commandment, and you play the part of a psychopathic murderer who is still alive and in prison, Aina.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is very recent past. You know, the story came to light probably in 2018-19, but it takes, you know, the real events took place in the last kind of decade. It's very recent. It's, you know, this took place in a small village called Maidsmorton in Buckingham. where Peter and Peter Farquhar and Anne Moore Martin lived. So yeah, it's very recent memory.
Yeah, and you're brilliant in it because it's a difficult ask, isn't it? It's first of all a real life person still alive, and they had to charm their way into the lives of Peter and Anne Moore Martin. So that's the psychopath, because we read about psychopaths and we know that they can be very disarmingly charming. And yet there has to be a hint at somebody who's capable of murder.
Yes. I mean, I was lucky in that the writing from Sarah Phelps is just as good as it gets. And I read it and kind of felt like everything was contained in that. You know, that was the map of how to play it and how to sort of, you know, follow that story. But then there was lots, you know, there's a documentary made about this a couple of years ago, very, very good documentary, which is on Channel 4. And so there was that to go on. There was people to talk to connected to the case. There was lots to read about. So, you know, there was a lot to go on. And then I was just in great hands. We had a fairly incredible director, Saul Dibb, and
a great cast as well.
I mean, like a phenomenal cast. When, you know, Timothy Spall, Anne Reid, Annabelle Scully, Sheila Hancock, like the list goes on. Conor McNeil, and it was my first time working in the UK. It was my first time working with any of the actors. I'd worked with Jonathan Aris actually before in a job in Dublin, and it was like things get so much easier when you're working with brilliant people like that. They kind of lift you up to their level. So yeah, it was a really special job to do, actually.
So talk to me a little bit about, you know, it is dark. It's very dark, obviously. And as I say, Benfield, convicted murderer, in prison. I see he's appealing his conviction. Did you ever think about the fact that he would be looking at you, watching you play him?
Not really.
No.
There's a tightrope you walk when you do things like this. You know, you read the script, and that's your starting point. And obviously, I went out and did every bit of research I could, and did all my due diligence. And there was a need to be very, very accurate and very, I suppose, focused on the kind of the facts in telling the story. And I let that be my guide. But after a point, you just have to put that behind you. And the only way you can serve the story, and it's a story I cared a lot about, is to kind of put that behind you and play the role as kind of down the line as you can.
Because his family are still alive, and the families of Peter and Anne are still alive as well.
Yeah.
So that's a consideration. It's getting huge plaudits. So do you know when you're doing this, or did you know when you're doing it, that it was something special?
I knew it was quality, like from across the board, all the creative team behind it, the writing, the actors, the director. I knew it was, and I knew that the story was deeply moving. Like on the page, it was deeply moving. And then when I saw it, probably a couple of weeks before it came out, that it took me by surprise, because I suppose you're sort of staying in your lane, kind of doing your job, and you're not really thinking too much about the other moving parts and the kind of the overall story. And I just found it a deeply moving piece of work. I mean, what I suppose is different about this, in the kind of realm of, you know, true stories or true crime, although I don't really think it fits into that category very easily, it's about Peter and Anne's lives. And, you know, the story sort of radiates out from there. We meet their families, we meet Ben, obviously, and then we meet, you know, the police investigation, but it always kind of comes back to them, and it's about their lives as well as their deaths. And for me, watching it, I just thought, you're brought so well into their inner world, you know, down to what Peter and Anne, or what Timothy and Anne do with the roles. I knew the quality was there, but you can never really predict a reaction. And it's been lovely. It's been so lovely that people connect to it on that level, you know.
So the third episode is on tonight, and then the final episode tomorrow night on BBC One. Are you from an acting background, Anna?
No, not at all. I think my mum did a play in university.
Right, one play.
She played a guard.
Right.
She did one play and that was it. In and out.
Right. So where did it come from then?
It came in around 2002 when Giffgrub was kind of at its, like when there was Saipan was going on. There
right.
was, you know, there was all of that. Mick McCarthy, Roy Keane on the radio. I don't know what it was about it, but I just thought people doing impressions and funny voices was the best crack ever. So I started doing that. I remember getting a couple of quid at a christening from people saying, do your Mick McCarthy or do your Niall Quinn. And that was my like first performance, I suppose. But
I suppose you would find Roy Keane quite easy because you're from Cork.
You know, I think in hindsight, I was always doing an impression of an impression of Roy Keane.
Oh, you were doing Mario Rosenstock's version of Roy Keane.
I was doing Mario's Roy,
right.
But like, which in itself is just a brilliant Roy. But the thing about Keane, he's evolving always. The accent's always changing, I think.
Yeah, he's in that. It's on Sky. Overlap is the name of it. He's touring the UK and Ireland in the company of. Is it Jamie Carragher and somebody else? Anyway, it's very funny.
Oh, and Gary Neville, is it? Or yeah,
it's Gary Neville. Yeah, it's very funny. He's very funny. Very funny guy. Very quick-witted.
He's very, very quick-witted.
Yes, yeah. So I have to ask you to do a Roy Keane or a Mick McCarthy or a Niall Quinn, whichever you want to do.
Are you going to sabotage my career before it's even started, Ray?
Well, you brought it up. I didn't know this. I didn't know that Mario Rosenstock was your inspiration. Just like
James Galway
was Lizzo's inspiration.
I'd need to listen to a little bit more Mario, I think, before
right,
I go
okay,
back there.
There you go. You're very guarded. Very guarded, that Ada Hardwick. Yeah. So normal people, it's hard to believe. Is that you shot that 5 years ago now? Is it?
Four
years ago.
Yeah,
right.
But still, that does kind of shock me.
Yeah. And it's Lear, was because a lot of your Paul Mescal and you and a lot of people were from the Lear Academy.
There was a load of us on that, playing pals, playing friends who had been either in the same year or in around the same year, yeah. So it was kind of surreal. It was like we was just a kind of continuation of, you know,
Yeah.
Our Friday night lives, we just kind of carried it on to that job. And it was amazing. It definitely made things a bit easier. The chemistry was there, I suppose.
And you could do your own accent as such in Lakelands probably as well. Now you're English in the Sixth Commandment. And now I know it all makes sense now because Sir Cormac said upstairs that you enjoy doing accents. So that dates back to 2002 and Giffgrub.
Well, I think the voice is such a like personal thing. No two voices are the same, and that's my way in to most things. Very often you're asked to do your own accent for things now, and while that opens things up in a brilliant way, I often feel like I can never just do my own accent because that will, you know, inevitably be a lot of me. Sometimes that's what's required. But yeah, there was something very particular about this voice that I wanted to get right. And I was lucky. I worked with a great dialect coach, Emma Stevens-Fisher. And I had a great dialect coach in the Lear, Gavin O'Donoghue. And yeah, it's always something I've liked because I think it's, yeah, there's the authenticity bit and there's getting it right. But really, it's just the voice in general is such
like
a particular thing.
What Stephen Graham says, it's the walk for him.
You can see that, can't you? He's always got that down to T. You know, he's very particular.
He gets the walk first, and then that helps him get into character. Yeah, so it's
whatever
works.
Key you have, you know, and it can change job to job. But you know, there's often it's just like one slight thing, and once you have that, you can sort of rely on your instinct. Then
you're off. You're in the zone. Ain is perfect in the Sixth Commandment. As are his co-stars. Well done to you all. Up Cork. That's Maeve. Ina, I'm sure we'll talk again. Good luck with everything. And as I said, Sixth Commandment, third episode tonight, and then the fourth and final one tomorrow on BBC One at 9 o'clock. Ina Hardwick. Thanks, Ina. Bye now.
Thanks.
Bye. And Ish Toshinam, the Preach Skelton in Oakdale, Kieran O'Farda. Gurmaga Kieran. Tom Brannock is going to be talking to us from our Cork studio in about 20 minutes' time. Any questions on preparing yourself for the holidays? You know, anything about travel insurance, avoiding scams, anything like that? Tom will be able to answer your questions. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. We've two quizzers standing by to the Who Done a Quiz. And there's a prize, a two-night break at the Hendrick Smithfield with tickets to the Jemison Experience. HendrickDublin.ie, HendrickDublin.ie, and it's there just off Smithfield in Dublin 7. A perfect location to explore everything that Dublin has to offer. Two-night stay for two people, HendrickDublin.ie. Des Boogie in Tyrrellstown, how are you doing, Des?
How are you, Ray? How's it going?
Not too bad. You're on your way home.
Well, I'm actually at home now waiting for the call, but I'm in the estate where I live, Tyrrellstown, yeah.
Okay, great. And how was your weekend?
Very good, thanks, very good.
Is that all you're going to give me? Very good.
No. I was walking yesterday, so, and Saturday I was just doing cleaning, as I normally do, and a few drinks Saturday night then.
Right, and you were working near Crow Park?
I was walking in Ryan's Pub on North Circular Road, right beside Crow Park.
Ah, yeah, so you had all the fans in there, yeah.
Ah, yeah, place was mobbed, yeah.
Yeah. Good crack, I'd say.
Ah, yeah, there's always a good buzz around the GA their games, you know, but I won't be walking next Sunday because I'm on the hill with the lads for the Dubs game.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
And are you a regular on Hill 16?
Ah, yeah, we kind of got to all the games and we had my son, you know.
Right, and do you do the face paint or anything like that, sombrero, any of that?
No. I'm actually Brent's now. My wife just bought me a poncho for Sunday just in case.
It rains.
Because of the deluge it was yesterday, you know. She bought a blue poncho of pennies today. So that's the first thing I've branched out into. Yeah. Normally, when it rains, I just get wet.
I believe the weather's going to break Wednesday week. That's what they're saying.
Yeah, well, now, if you believe the Met Service, well, good luck to you. Because the only way I believe the Met Service is I open the window in the morning and I look out. No, that's my accurate weather.
But you know, Des, when you were a kid, I used to think, you know, it's been raining so much now, there's no rain left. You know,
I was thinking that last week, Ray, 4 or 5 days running, I was trying to cut the grass in my dad's house. I was thinking, it has to stop at some place. There can't be any more left up there, you know. It's so crazy.
You're heading to the sun, are you?
I go to Portugal then next month, yeah.
Oh, nice. In August, yeah. Hopefully it's not too hot for you. Jeez, there's the problem.
It does tend to hit over 30 degrees, but I mean, so a couple of my mates just came back from Alicante in Spain, yeah. And it was 44 or 45 last week, but that's
We're not built for that. I don't know who he is.
No. I don't mind the sun, Ray, but you know, 10 days does me, and I'm glad to get home there, you know.
Yeah. You're up against John Quinn, who's in Castle Blaney. How are you doing, John?
Hi, Ray. How's things?
You're not in Castle Blaney, you're in Ballinabb, but you're from Castle Blaney, is that it?
Yeah, that's right. We're heading home back to Castle Blaney, as Big Tom said.
Right. What are you doing in Ballinabb?
Just had a cup of tea there. We stopped off for a cup of tea on the way back. We're coming back from Sligo. We were over in Castle Largan there for a couple of nights.
Right. Is there friends, family there, or you're just on a weekend away?
Just a weekend away, hey, myself and Aileen.
Nice. The Castle Largan Hotel was brilliant. Good review.
Yes.
5 stars on TripAdvisor from John Quinn, Castle Blaney.
Yeah.
Very great.
All the way.
Yeah. So what did you do? How did you spend your days then?
Well, Saturday was a washout, so we've been to Sligo town and we just done a bit of walking around and had something to eat and a few drinks with a few friends. And yesterday we went out to Strand Hill, so it was lovely. It was really sunny and really nice yesterday.
You went for a walk on the beach?
We're on the beach, yeah. Well, we were on the beach, yeah.
Nice. And your daughter Ellen is home from London?
Ellen's at home and Conor's working and Noah's working and Emer's over in London, so we're saying hello to them all.
There you go, you have it done. Right. Okay, so it's Des versus John. You know the deal.
Good luck, Des. Come on, John. Best luck to you.
Three categories. I'll give you the category, then I ask you if you want a clue. If you go for a clue and you get it right, you get a point. If you go without a clue and get it right, you get 2 points. Whoever has the most points at the end is the winner. If it's a draw on points, we go to a tie-break question. Good luck to you both. Here we go. Des, to you first, and music. Do you want a clue or not?
No clue, thanks, Ray.
Okay, for 2 points, Des, good luck with this. Who's singing? It is Hall & Oates. Well done. Straight in. 2 points. Good start for you. Well done, Des. John, music. Do you want a clue or not?
No clue, please.
Okay. Who is this for 2 points? Homeward bound. I wish I was. Homeward.
Simon and Arthur from.
It is, and you are, coincidentally, you're homeward bound.
Homeward bound, right, yeah.
Homeward bound, there you go.
Keep her lit, you know.
Keep her lit, yeah. Simon and Garfunkel, 2 points. Good start, lads. Category number two, film actors. Or as the saying, Kildare, film actors. Des, do you want a clue or not?
No clue, right, Des.
Okay, so for 2 points, who is this?
There's like secret Disney, like Walt Disney apartments within the club. Disney has an apartment that's above Pirates of the Caribbean, and everything in the room comes to life. He showed me a painting where it's got four jazz musicians in it, and at a certain point in the day,
no,
each one disappears from the painting,
yeah,
and they reappear somewhere else in the room and play a solo.
It's Ryan Gosling. Ryan Gosling.
Oh, no.
He plays Ken in Barbie at the moment.
I wouldn't know that because I won't be watching that film.
You won't be watching? You could be surprised. I believe it's very good.
Good luck with that, right?
You're right. Right, yes. Good luck with that. Okay, John, film actors, do you want a clue or not?
No clue, please.
No clue. Okay, for 2 points, who is this?
It was the best. You know, you get a few of those in your career that when you get the call, and like typical Chris, it was no preamble, nothing, just the call out of the blue. You know, it was a gift, a total gift. And then in classic Chris style, he flew from LA to give me the actual script. You know, you never get anything on email. It has to give you the...
Well, Cillian Murphy.
It is, yeah. Talking about Chris Nolan, who directed Oppenheimer. And you get 2 points. Well done. Okay, so Des, you're on two. John, you're on four. So Des, it's UK politics. You don't have a choice, really, do you? You have to go without it.
No.
You have to go without a clue. Okay. So who is this for 2 points to keep you in the quiz?
The baton will be handed over in what does unexpectedly turn out.
Boris Johnson.
Yeah, it is. 2 points. Well done.
They changed the rules halfway through, but...
immediately recognisable. You get 2 points. Well done. So you can't do any more. You're on four. John, if you get anything from this one, you're today's winner. So it's UK politics. What do you want to do?
Well, give me a clue, please.
Yeah, okay. This PM suffered defeats in Thursday's by-elections. That's a good clue. For 1 point, who is this?
UK-India week is genuinely a very big moment in the calendar, but this year I think we're actually going one better. It's not just India week, but a whole India summer. There's, of course, the G20 in New Delhi.
Ricky Sunak, isn't it?
Yeah, Rishi Sunak. It is Rishi Sunak. You get the point there, yeah. Okay, well done. Well done, John. Yeah, Des, sorry about that.
Not to worry. Well done, John.
Des, usually four is a good score, but not good enough to beat John today.
Well, last time Dublin played Monaghan, we won, so it's his score. Fair play, you know.
Right.
I'll take Sam home next Sunday, right?
Yeah, you will. Enjoy that.
Leave
in 16. We'll send you out a Radar Show Keep Cup. Well done, Des. Good luck. See you. Bye. Right, John. Thanks. John, you're today's winner, which means...
Thank you.
Yourself and Eileen are off to the Hendrick Smithfield. And you can go to hendrickdublin.ie to see what's in store for you.
Lovely stuff. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Hi, Eileen. Yeah, you're very welcome. And safe home to you both. See you now. Bye, 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 bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Aina Hardwick is a legend, and he's not finished yet. Just by way of useful information, Mario Rosenstock and Aina Hardwick both attended the same secondary school, Ashton School in Cork City. Must be something in it. That's Jerry in Cork. I didn't know Mario Rosenstock attended school in Cork, but you learn something new every day. Bruce Hornsby and The Way It Is on RTÉ Radio 1. Now, we're in the peak of the summer holiday season right now, and thousands of us are either enjoying or planning to enjoy a break abroad. In the midst of the much-awaited getaway, the last thing you want is to fall victim to a pesky pickpocket or some local holiday scam. So to help avoid such scenarios, travel editor with the Irish Examiner, Tom Brannock, is down in our Cork studio with some preventative tips and holiday hacks. How you doing, Tom?
Mighty, Ray. How's it going today?
There's an intro for you, huh? Preventative tips and holiday hacks.
Holiday hacks. We all have a good hack nowadays.
I suppose you've been the travel editor. Everybody wants to talk to you about what's going on in Road and Carfew and Evia. And what's the current situation?
Yeah, well, I guess it seems to be changing by the hours, but especially given the nature of the crisis. But I suppose that there's so many, it's playing out in so many different ways in terms of the holidaymakers on the ground now, where it's a nightmare, and then it's pretty heartbreaking for those considering or planning a trip to go to those three islands in the next few days. So, and then in those scenarios, you have people who, I know there's been a lot of advice right now, like even from a government level, to check in with your tour operator, and that's great if you've travelled with the tour operator, because I know the likes of TUI, they're one of the more popular tour operators travelling to Greece, and they're bonded with the ITAA, so I know they're working with a lot of consumers right now to rebook or maybe reschedule holidays. But so many Irish people, you know, we, as much as we recognise the benefits of a travel operator, we're pretty savvy travellers nowadays, and we'll, you know, chance a Ryanair flight or an Airbnb and our own car hire. So for those folks, you know, you've some in, it's a different story, and you know, who do they go to? So they'll find themselves, you know, reaching out to multiple people, and you have a scenario in Greece right now where if you've booked a hotel, you know, some of them aren't there anymore. You hear of Airbnbs burning down, so it is a nightmare. But then flights are continuing to go, so if you have booked a holiday, for example, and you choose to opt out with, you know, there's an Aer Lingus flight to Corfu tomorrow, and they serve a purpose too, right? Because they're bringing a lot of people back, so they can't just stop the routes. But you won't be covered in terms of travel insurance if you decide to opt out from a flight that's still operating. So there's a lot to kind of think about. There was already a crisis, I guess, last week in terms of the heat wave, and people were thinking, you know, shouldn't I go if I've young kids, or, you know, if people with, you know, elderly people. But this has thrown a whole other kind of nightmare scenario into it. So it's...
Yeah, so the Department of Foreign Affairs is going normal precautions for Greece. So unless they tell us we can't travel, can't...
Yeah, exactly.
You can't get your money back on a flight that's booked and it still goes.
Yeah, it harkens a bit back to COVID, where if the flight is still operating, it's kind of on you. It's on the consumer's decision to kind of make a call for it. And I know there's talk that there's some kind of reprieve to the heat today. I think Corfu is looking better than Rhodes, for example, but... it's a lot of people are going to be making tough decisions, those who haven't travelled with bonded operators.
Yeah, you're going to be right about this, Tom, in the years to come, about changing trends in holiday making because of the weather.
No, exactly. Yeah. And even I travel a lot north. I mean, and I know in Ireland, because of our, you know, winters, and I mean, Northern European, we typically gravitate towards the sun. And I'm not necessarily one of those people that needs that sun fix, but I think more of us are starting to look towards non-Medi destinations. I mean, I was on the Mediterranean last summer, and it was an amazing, even though it was like 42 degrees in the back end of Montenegro or whatever. But like, I think it is seeing it will result in a shift in our patterns.
It will,
all right.
It will, yeah.
And holiday homes, and you know, it's kind of fascinating.
Okay. So pickpockets. Let's talk about pickpockets. it sounds like something from the 80s, but it is still rampant.
Oh, big time. I don't know.
I don't know if you saw this lady. She operates in Venice.
I was chatting to Niamh, your producer, about this actually a while ago. We were doing our best Italian impressions there.
Yeah, she's a lady called Monica, and she outs pickpockets in the Venice area. So she goes around with her camera and she spots them and then she shouts at them. This.
Attenzione pickpocket! Attenzione borseggiatrici! Attenzione pickpocket! Attenzione borseggiatrici!
It looks very effective.
Fair play to her. You'd almost tip her. That's a public service right there.
Because they sprint away. And what I noticed about them, and I watched a number of her videos, they're all girls. Teenage and girls in their early 20s.
And that's also a point. You know, it's often the unexpected. It's all demographics. It's all ages. You got to be not without being too alarmist about it, but like you have to expect the unexpected. And in a situation like that, I mean, that lady was in Venice, right? And it's a shame because it can kind of, you know, give you a negative impression of some destinations. And I know we're going to talk about tips and such, but I always say don't. Like, I lived in Cape Town for a couple of years and nothing ever happened to me down there. But I expected the worst before I'd gone to live down there because I'd heard so many nightmare stories. So while things can happen quick in a lot of places, if you take some precautions, at least you'll give yourself a better chance.
Okay, well, give us your tips then.
Well, I suppose you're starting off from kind of like preventative measures. So that's in terms of what you're packing and what you're wearing before you go. So like when you're in, they say like don't be a walking buffet to pickpocketers that don't look like a target. So coming down to your dress code, particularly when you're in transit, like don't dress to impress. Leave all your kind of fancy, your outfit of the day moments to when you're on your hotel balcony later and right. watch your jewellery. You can even get pack-safe clothing now. This all sounds quite alarmist, but we just want to kind of get people safe when they're going to, you know, Paris or Barcelona, just so they're not victims on the subway or what have you. You're really recommended to for your valuables, so maybe your passport, your wallet and so on, to put them, to always keep them zipped. Like tote bags are a total no-no if you're, you know, traveling through areas of, I mean, which may be prone to pickpocketing.
Yeah.
And even if you have a zipper on your handbag, I've seen suggestions where people, you know, make sure that the zip is in the front of their body, as in versus the zip behind you. Mm. Because, you know, as savvy as we are as Irish people, you know, I think like pickpockets are pros. Don't underestimate them, and they can get in anywhere. Even if you've got things, and kind of adept pickpocket will be able even to get into your breast pocket. So zipping things up, if you are a guy who tends to put things in their front pockets, like be aware of the size of your wallet in your pocket to make sure that you and, you know, I even find myself, I'm, you know, frisking myself on occasion, just making sure that everything's still there. And don't.
And what about Tom, just because you do, you know, you're on holidays and you have a map, and it's like a big red arrow over your head going, I'm a tourist, come pickpocket me.
Yeah, it totally is. And that's why, you know, planning out your route in Gare du Nord in Paris or, you know, on Las Ramblas is not the best idea. So you should be doing all that planning before before you set off. Have a sense of purpose so you're not like gathering. And I mean, it's already bad enough when you're at a ticket point trying to buy metro tickets, you know, you're changing language, you're not used to the interface, and already you can be target enough in that kind of sense. So
what sort of things do they do, pickpockets? They have they got diversionary?
They love crowds.
Go on, love crowds, obviously. Yeah, yeah.
They love crowds. So and there's so many different like tactics to kind of throw you off guard. And so because of crowds, if you're on like an escalator or a subway or, you know, a packed plaza or whatever, it's not really going to trigger you that much or start somebody, you if you're pushed.
Yes, yeah.
And there's all these, you know, pickpocketers typically work in groups, so they have this kind of, often have a kind of, they call it a sandwich tactic. So for example, if you're trying to board a subway, maybe somebody in front of you will suddenly stop, you push up against them, someone pushes against up behind you from behind, and suddenly your portemonnaie is gone for good. And so it's awful elements like that. So anything that's kind of unexpected, you know, something, somebody spilling something on you, there's so many different reasons, and we can be kind of maybe.
Okay, so they're good. That's good advice for pickpockets, and just have the stuff in front of you, you know, so put your rucksack.
Yes, be aware
of
things
front,
are. Even
yes.
Like with your backpack in front of you if you're on public transport, and I always like will make sure that my back is against the window, so I'm like facing the crowd and what have you. So
and any other scams that people should be aware of other than pickpocketing?
Well, I suppose it kind of varies from place to place. Like you have like I find in the States, it's often people, which actually find I've never really had many issues in the States, but it's often people who have you know, stories of being down in your luck some place. It could be, you know, taxi scams, or in North Africa, for example, I've often found it's kind of, hey, I'm your waiter from last night. And I think Irish people, I kind of went down a rabbit hole with a waiter before in Morocco, and suddenly he was taking me to his you know, friend's market stall, and my friend and I realised we'd suddenly racked up like 70 euros on like turmeric or something. Now we saw the error of our ways and we refunded, but I think Irish people, because we were joking afterwards, we were like, we didn't want to say no to the fella, you know, you kind of go. So I think you need to be assertive, and because the people are often...
Here's the thing, Tom, before we let you go. I think, do you need to think the worst of everybody? And it's a terrible way to live, but do you need to be suspicious of everybody?
I think we... not everybody, but I think we're pretty sophisticated travellers at this stage, and we kind of know how to judge situations, and it's kind of balancing the element of being culturally immersive but also protecting yourself. And right. I find one last word that the couple of Focal can go a long way, because if you say no English, or if you don't speak French and we'll say Tunisia or someplace, lots of these scamsters can speak English, but it's amazing how disarming the couple of Focal can be.
All right, there you go. That's top tip from Tom Brannock. Thanks, Tom. Mind yourself.
Bye,
talk Slán. To you again. Bye.
Thanks,
bye. Slán. Okay, that's it from us. Sarah and Cormac are on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.